TheUnheardNerd.com.
Welcome to Word to the Nerd, the interview podcast from TheUnheardNerd.com. You can hit me up on Twitter, is at TheUnheardNerd, Facebook.com/TheUnheardNerd, or TheUnheardNerd@gmail.com. Joining me on the show this time, one half of the Thought Criminals. He's been on before as the Thought Criminals, but now he's on his own. This is Michael Kill.
Listen up, yeah, it's a word to the nerd. Coming through the speakers from the one you never heard. A brand new show you don't want to miss, because you never heard a nerd with a style like this. Nerdcore, hip-hop, 8-bit, pop rock. It's our culture on the rise and it won't stop. Podcast drop, best day of the week, because the unheard nerd is about to speak. The unheard nerd is about to speak. The unheard nerd is about to speak.
I gotta say, I feel pretty alright lately. Congratulations, world, nobody fucked up my day. Guess I gotta say, I feel pretty alright lately. Congratulations, world, nobody fucked up my day. I woke up about 7 o'clock. I don't sleep naked no more, not even in my own spot. But whatever's clever is cool. I wipe the sleep from my eyes, roll out of my bed and tell my family goodbye. See you in the afternoon, not nothing, no crazy late. I got some stuff I gotta handle, so I'm making my way downtown. No smile, no frowns, how we get down. Clowns email me just to get turned down for another first collabo. My rhymes ain't too shallow, but I know you said you pay for words, whatever, what have you. But you spit garbage more than the monster in the disposal hole in that one episode of Star Wars. But hey, it's cool, we do what we gotta do, and I know how it goes. I kinda used to suck too. I mean, well, not like you though. I mean, oh God, no. I was born spitting rhymes better than you ever will, unless the world flips around and fucking crazy turns bizarro. Alright, just send me the beat tomorrow. I gotta say, I feel pretty alright lately. Congratulations, world, nobody fucked up my day. Guess I gotta say, I feel pretty alright lately. Congratulations, world, nobody fucked up my day. Guess I gotta say, I feel pretty alright lately. Congratulations, world, nobody fucked up my day. Guess I gotta say, I feel pretty alright lately. Congratulations, world, nobody fucked up my day.
It's my great pleasure to welcome to the show this time around none other than Michael Kill. And well, thanks for joining me, Michael.
Thanks for having me.
No, you're more than welcome. And it's not the first time we've spoken on a podcast. I had you on before with Sulfur, and we did the Thought Criminals podcast.
Yeah.
So I guess the question is, and it's one that's been posed on the Facebook page as well, the Nerdcore forum on Facebook. What's going on with Thought Criminals?
With Thought Criminals, we're still together. It's just been kind of a hiatus of sorts. We've done maybe one show this year in Charlotte, and we've just both been focusing on our solo stuff a lot more.
Yeah,
it's looking like we're probably gonna finally do the next Thought Criminals album next year.
I think that comes as a great relief, because I think some people thought, we'll come back to Beaker later on, but Beaker on the Facebook page, his question actually was, why did the Thought Criminals break up? They were so great.
Yeah, it wasn't really a breakup. I mean, we've shifted a few times. Like, whenever I first met Beaker, we were doing stuff with a live band more, and then Thought Criminals kind of became just me and Sulfur, and then we were just both so busy with other stuff or whatever. And a big thing was just wanting, like, I know he wanted it for himself, and I also wanted it for him, just Sulfur to have more of an identity outside the group, because I had already had so much stuff going on with doing things with Warrock and whatever, that, and touring so much, that it just kind of gave a chance for him to, like, establish himself more outside the group without, like, having to have me around.
Yeah, well, you mentioned Adam Warrock. He's obviously a phenomenal talent and a very prolific artist. But you do tend to get paired with him a little bit. I was talking to Beefy recently about his latest album, Grown Up, where you and Adam collaborated on the same track, and he was like, it was
That's cheating. I cheated on that one.
Really?
I feel like I phoned that one in. I was like, what two guys do I really want to work with? Cahill and Warrock. They've done a million songs together. They sound really good together. All right, Easy Money. That's free. That's a freebie. I feel bad because they work together on Time. I don't want to lump them together, typecast them that they have to work together. But yeah. I really thought they'd be fun on this song about monsters.
So of your collaborations, I suppose, I mean, people probably associate you more as or with the Thought Criminals, but also you've got that association with Adam Warrock. Which team up, if you had to choose, which one works best?
Oh God!
Yeah, that's pulling no punches this time.
with Thought Criminals, it's so completely different working in both capacities. Because with Thought Criminals, usually I take the ball and run with it, and then I just kind of a lot of times when I bring Sulfur stuff, it's more like I have this song that I've started, but it doesn't have these parts specifically. What do you want to do on it? And with stuff that I do with Warrock, it's usually like the reverse is true, where he's like, I've got this concept. What do you have that makes sense for that? So it's in a lot of ways, I guess I would say it's easier to work with Warrock for that reason, because we both kind of click in the same different ways. Whereas whenever I'm with Thought Criminals, it's much more of like a process for me. It's more work whenever we do Thought Criminals stuff, which is not to downplay what Sulfur does in Thought Criminals at all, because he has better verses than me a lot of Thought Criminals stuff, I think. But God, that's a really hard thing to say, like, flatly one or the other.
Yeah.
I think probably Thought Criminals, but just because I usually have kind of like a better way of, not a better way. I have more of a like final say in everything with Thought Criminals, because Thought Criminals started as me and another producer, like in like 2001 or something. So it's always kind of been like my project that other people have come into, and then it became like me and Sulfur as a duo and much more like that. But usually with the production and stuff, I never have a moment where Sulfur's like, oh God, no. So I guess Thought Criminals, just because I have like unbridled creative input on that stuff.
Well, I'm sure people will be pleased to hear that, you know, there's the prospect of more Thought Criminals coming up in the near future. But let's look at, you know, you and Adam. And yeah, you obviously had a lot of success with the Brown Coats mixtape. You had the Slytherin House mixtape as a follow up to that. You've also had Lab OM. Again, don't know how to pronounce it still, but I listen to that almost, you know, regularly still. I really, really love that. But I really wish there were more than four tracks. And
yeah.
On Twitter, Opera Memphis. I posed the questions. Could we have a full album of this? And Opera Memphis were down for it. They tweeted, "That's up to you guys. What about? How about that? Can you fit that into your schedule for me?"
I don't think we'll ever actually get a whole album of that stuff. But we did a second release that nobody knows about.
Really? Yeah. Completely.
In fact, I don't even remember the name of the opera we sampled off the top of my head. If you Google hip hop with various opera names, though, you might come across the long lost opera project that me and Warrock did. We did a second album that I actually thought was better, or not album, but EP, that I actually thought was better than La Boheme. And I don't know why it never really got announced. I did all the work on the production, and I was really proud of the beats I made, because it was kind of a departure. It's a lot more rappy than the first one was, I guess.
And that's out on the net. That's released somewhere.
It's somewhere on the internet. I don't even I know. I used to know the link to download it, and wow. I don't know anymore. It's not listed on me or Warrock sites. I don't think it's listed on the Opera Memphis site, although I'm sure the link to download it probably links to some, you know, site off of their site. But yeah, that I don't know what happened with that. And I have never told anybody on any form of social media. I've never talked about it in a podcast. Nobody has, I think I sent the link to maybe three or four like super dedicated fans I had, just like, hey, here's something. But yeah, it never got pushed, really. I think maybe because we had other stuff going on that we had to announce at the time.
I mean, well,
there was conflicts. I don't know.
This is really, I mean, messing with me, because it's both the most exciting news and also the most disappointing, because I'm going to have to really work hard to find that.
Yeah, it's better than La Boheme, I think. I really like my beats on it. But
I'm not sure we're going to remain friends after this.
I'm totally blanking on the name of the. I don't know why, but. But yeah, you can find it somewhere.
somewhere.
With some Googling. I know it's probably credited under Warrock's name. I don't even know if I was listed on the page that listed the album. But yeah.
Wow. Okay. anyone that finds that, I don't know. I'd have to make some incentive. So anyone that finds it and sends it to me, I will give something to.
It's like a treasure hunt now.
Yeah, it's like a massive Easter egg. There we go. All right, I think that's the end of the interview. I can't spend any more time talking to you. I need to find it.
Gotta go Google this.
But no, we will push on. I'll come back to that and probe you off mic maybe.
Here we are again at the beginning of the end. Same as before, same as the first time. Broken, we drink wine, eat and we feel fine. Slowly we're all dying, art is the through line. Pour myself like every single piece of me, every single memory. Let it resonate throughout these pieces. See, because I lost the one that brought the missing pieces. Each and every piece she used to give to me, created beautifully. She lived singing a song in her chest, and through her coffin sickness, it would take her best years, nothing less. I remember each and every kiss, each and every breath, and I pour it in my chest, down the canvas, let it rest. Each blank page I banker, each crowd with hands raised, each success until I fade into oblivion. Wish I had the money for the doctor and the medicine. All I am is just a broke musician, nothing more, nothing less. And we live and we love and we die, and we give all our love and we cry. If the days of our lives pass us by, let it be said that we tried, you and I. And I would rather love and lose than never love at all. And I would rather watch her die than never know her siren's call. And we live and we love and we die as the curtain comes down from the sky. Young Bohemians using their hands made a land as the internet expands, and we reach out and touch something. They say we waste our time, trust nothing, because we're here to make history. And in the process, through art makes emotions and connects us. In the meantime, I sit and write a symphony and hear the arias, areas of expertise. I weave melodies, try to pour my heart into it, every part into it. Cause all the pain of watching every coffin, seeing her pass, it fuels the legacy of that which will last. I will remember her in songs and rhythms. In these productions, I will love her every time I hear the things within her. Life is pain, love is worse, but from the first moment I saw her, I already lost her. Every cough I watched her falter. I never regret the time that me and Mimi spent, because a life that loved is worth all of the hard times it fostered. And we live and we love and we die, and we give all our love and we cry. If the days of our lives pass us by, let it be said that we tried, you and I. And I would rather love and lose than never love at all. And I would rather watch her die than ever know her siren's call. And we live and we love and we die as the curtain comes down from the sky. And we live and we love and we die, and we give all our love and we cry. If the days of our lives pass us by, let it be said that we tried, you and I. And I would rather love and lose than never love at all. And I would rather watch her die than ever know her siren's call. And we live and we love and we die as the curtain comes down from the sky. As the curtain comes down from the sky. As the curtain comes down from the sky. You and I.
Okay, so I mean, we mentioned again about the, you know, Thought Criminals has gone through different phases of, yeah, you know, being either just you and Sulfur or with a band. And it's my understanding that you've been working more with a band again lately. You know, but not with Thought Criminals, but on your own work. And is that done and dusted, or is that ongoing?
I've actually just started a new project. It's sort of, a lot of things are in a weird transitional phase. The new album that I did is a collaboration with my guitarist from my live band, Andy Wendt. And the album we did is like I did all the bass lines and the drums, and I did a lot of like chopping samples and stuff. And I did a little bit of like playing keyboards and things like that too. But every song has the guitarist on it. But so we actually have started doing shows that are just me and the guitarist, and nobody else. And we have another project we just started called The Glad You're Deads. And it's actually kind of like a little punk rock project we've started. And we've been doing shows with that locally. We're supposed to be going to South Carolina to record an EP of it, hopefully in the next month or two. But it's kind of something I'm handling separate from my rap stuff totally.
Okay, so it's not rap at all. It is literally just punk.
Yeah, the stuff we're doing with the band is much more like it's kind of like punky, I guess. It's more like it alternates between like 90s lo-fi rock and like folk punk stuff. Kind of bounces back and forth between that, but it's totally different than anything people are used to hearing from me.
And you mentioned folk, and there was an album or EP in the works with your wife that you were doing?
Yeah, we're still kicking around ideas on that, but we haven't actually, we're not close to finishing it yet. I keep hoping we'll get it done by Christmas, but I don't know if that's going to be the case or not. It's just been hectic with me touring and doing different stuff, and I was finishing up school. So it's just like a lot of hectic schedule things that have kept us from like finalizing the songs, but hopefully by at least hopefully like February or March of next year, I hope we'll have that done.
And it seems like you've got so many different things up in the air at the minute. I mean, again, I mentioned the live element, and you played a show recently as filling in as Malibu Shark Attack with Tribe One.
Yeah.
And I mean, to fill people in on Malibu Shark Attack, if they don't know, it's a collaboration really between a guy in Ireland, Rocky O'Reilly, and Tribe One. They collaborated on an album, self-titled album, which they released recently. I was lucky enough to go and see them when they played in London, supporting MC Lars. And absolutely, blew it away. Rocky is a lovely guy, really nice to talk to, just, talks for days. And he gave me the whole history, the whole backstory, exactly who contributed what to that album, in infinite detail. And but yeah, lovely guy, and the guys they had helping them as a live performance in London, they were really cool as well. But he was explaining that this is something that it can evolve and it can change, and it can be any number of different people as long as one of the core elements is there. So they could have a touring band in the UK, or they could have a touring band in the US, and it works. And so I was watching some footage of you rehearsing. Is it Put the Yo into New York?
Yeah.
And you were rocking the guitar. It looked like an SG of some variation. Is that a Gibson or?
Yeah, I love. It's actually an Epiphone, but Epiphone. I love Gibson guitars.
Yeah.
So I bought that SG. I think I bought it in like 97, 98. It's been my main guitar.
Yeah, an SG is my guitar of choice as well. People may or may not know that I play guitar and used to play in a band. But the SG I have is an Ibanez variation, to give it a twist. But yeah, really, really nice sound. Let's not talk about instruments too much.
The US version of Malibu Shark Attack is basically me and my guitarist that I was talking about earlier that worked with me on Snuggle. It's just me and him and Tribe, and we're basically the US version of Malibu Shark Attack.
so that's another thing that you've got up in the air. But let's talk about Snuggle. The Snuggle is real.
Yes.
I mean, how real is the Snuggle?
It's very real. It's frighteningly real.
Keep it.
It's like
real.
The dinosaurs in Jurassic Park level.
So. What is The Snuggle is Real? Explain this to us.
Well, it's an album that happened sort of by accident. Originally, I was just going to do a four-song EP with my guitarist that was going to be kind of like a precursor to my album Human Disaster that I've been working on for really long for me. Normally, I never spend more than like a month on an album. But I've been working on Human Disaster for like 2 years. So like I guess like 2 months ago, we put down the first demo for it. And basically, the way me and my guitarist started working on it was I had all these samples that I had pulled out for Human Disaster, but that I had never made songs out of, and that I couldn't figure out a way to do it and make it sound the way I wanted to. So basically, I just approached him and I was like, hey, we should do something where we write this whole thing in a week and we just grind out these songs and we can just try to make it like as spontaneous as possible and whatever. And then we finished the first song and I was like, man, this is like really good. I'd like to make more of this. And so we ended up spending about a month working on it, and it ended up being 10 tracks, and I ended up making it loaded with guest appearances from a lot of my friends from Nerdcore. Like, there's a lot of people on it that I've never actually recorded vocal collaborations with before that I've worked with in the past.
Well, it's been 10 years since I went in fear on a mission, the captain of a solo expedition, and it goes so slow, though I'm following thrills, I'm going yo-ho-ho and a bottle of pills, so I can cope with what I go through, so true. All hands on deck are two, no crew, and no white whale, no known safe route, taking on water, I don't bother to bail out. Cause I know how this ends, friend, I signal distress and then pirates are sent. I just remember what Jess said, when I see the hovering birds, all the fam on every world, all we have is our word. If I strive, survival's assured, or so at least I've heard. Every course I've set has set me headed for icebergs. I stay afloat, forward, never rowing ashore. I sail alone, laying lower than the ocean floor.
And we're back on board the sinking ship. It's been 10 years since they came for me, and I'm still waiting for the second visit. See, thought I'd never be escaped, but it's just a thing. Once they got you one time, you're never really free. Bitter, I'm not bitter, mad as hell. First boarded a ship with a brick set sail. Slow ride to nowhere, strapped in a broken mast. They made me captain once I laughed out loud last. Where we gonna go? Straight to the bottom. Sought solace my whole life, but can't forget where you came from. Wanted to catch one, my limit break max. Wrist bent, brittle when it collapsed. Saw him in a circle with the lines of salt. Thought I'd have it all once I killed John Galt. Well, I guess he would bite when you sternly said, we sailed his ship to the day we're dead. And we're back on board the sinking ship.
Let's talk about some of these, because there's a few names that people are. There's a lot of names that people who like nerdcore are going to recognize. We've got Mega Ran Random, featuring on track two. At time of recording, I'm actually going to see him live tomorrow, so I'm super excited about that.
Oh, nice!
He's over here at the moment in the UK, so I'm going to go and see him at the same venue I saw Malibu Shark Attack at, actually. Which is kind of convenient, and I'm going to interview him tomorrow as well.
Oh, nice!
Well, yeah, it's podcast week this week. I've got a mixtape on the go as well.
Nice.
Random, Random's on there. Let's go through the list of people, names that people will know. You can explain a little bit about that, and then we'll come back to some of those that they might not recognize.
Okay,
we've got Dr. Awkward, who's on tour with MC Frontalot at the moment, and you've got MC Frontalot on there as well, which is it's something of a first for you, I think.
Frontalot, I actually had originally asked, we had started a Thought Criminals record, and Frontalot and MC Soul, who used to be on Anticon and Fake Four, I was going to have them collaborate on the song, but then the Thought Criminals album never happened, and they ended up doing a collaboration on Frontalot's new record.
All right.
So when I was working on this record, I was like, I just hit him up and was like, hey, you think you would have time before you go on tour to do this track? And thankfully he did. So.
Well, and you've teamed him up. It's interesting. A couple of interesting team ups on here. With More or Less.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's unusual. I wouldn't put the two together. And I haven't heard the tracks yet, so I don't know how well it works, but I'm sure you're going to say it's awesome.
It is awesome.
It sounds like it should be.
Yeah. I actually think they have a lot in common with their views on rap music and the era of rap that they both really like the most.
I think they're both very considered people.
Yes. Yeah, so I think it seemed kind of natural to me. I was trying to think, originally I was thinking in terms of like people who would be weird to have on the same track, but I think actually it ended up being really natural having the two of them together. And just different conversations actually that I had with More or Less at South by Southwest this year about how we both felt about hip hop music and the way we made hip hop music and being guys that were a little older making it or whatever. So it kind of all ties into the theme of the track I put them on. So
cool. And another combination you wouldn't necessarily put together automatically is Adam Warrock and Chocolates.
Yeah.
It's just like, is it just picking names out of hats at this point?
Well, Chocolates, meeting him in person and from knowing him from Twitter, I knew he was like a hilarious person.
Yeah, yeah. Anyone that doesn't follow him on Instagram is missing out. He's really good.
He's the nicest guy. And actually, the thing with putting him on a track with Adam Warrock was we met him in, I guess, 2012. And that was the year we did the No Friends tour that was me and Adam Warrock and Tribe One and Jesse Dangerously. Well, at that point, we talked incessantly about how Chocolates was the nicest person in the world and how much we love Chocolates, to the point, me and Warrock specifically did, to the point that we actually got concerned that Jesse Dangerously thought we were just being sarcastic and that we hated him. And that, you know, they're both part of Backburner, and that wasn't the case. We sincerely loved Chocolates, so it's sort of just been a thing. We had talked about doing a song with him forever, and the song is called Summertime Sadness, but the original working title was I Hate Summer, and the whole song was just about how much we hate summertime. So it's a funny song, so it made the most sense to put him on that one since he's so punchline oriented.
Yeah. And Jesse Dangerously, who you mentioned, is there. We've got Schaefer the Dark Lord, who's on the track that is available to stream at the moment.
Yeah.
And Shane Hall and Sulphur, who people will be familiar with. Now, let's talk about some of the guys on here that people won't be familiar with. Starting with the opening track, DJ, I'm going to mess this pronunciation up, DJ Mo Nichols.
Yeah, which is kind of like a play on monocles.
Gotcha.
DJ Mo Nichols is somebody I actually met when we did the No Friends tour. He's a friend of my friend Chesky's, and he's Chesky's live DJ sometimes. But he's also done stuff with my friend Brzezowski, who's also worked with Random and some other people. But yeah, he does a ton of stuff in the Northeast, and he has some really amazing mixtapes. So I've actually... He did scratches on something else I've worked on recently too. I guess maybe for Human Disaster that nobody's heard yet. But I was trying to think of DJs who would be a good fit, and he immediately popped into my head. On that song, he's actually scratching different dialogue samples from Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
Okay. Of course.
But he's a really good DJ. He's a really good DJ, and he has a really good series of like classic hip hop mixtapes.
Cool. We've got Dopey Ziegler.
Dopey Ziegler just released his first album. I don't know if I'm supposed to say this, but Dopey Ziegler is the new alter ego of Kabuto the Python.
Oh.
He might kill me for telling people that, because he never really likes people
I mean, I don't know how many alter egos he's got, but there's a
he's
few.
Got a lot. Yeah, Dubby Ziegler is the new alter ego. He just put out a record under that name of that stuff, and I think the same guy produced it that produced the last Kabuto record. So if you guys haven't checked that out yet, I think it's at swagberg.bandcamp.com or something. It's good. Cool. But yeah, that is who that is. So I guess technically people do know. That is probably.
I'm pretty sure he doesn't listen to this podcast, so
he doesn't listen to anything nerdcore oriented. It's funny because he's also a DJ for like a really big nerdcore name. But again, I don't know if I should tell people. But one of the most famous nerdcore people, he does all the scratches on their records.
Wow, so, secrets.
Yeah, he's a weirdly secretive dude. He's also like related to Andrew WK, so just weird.
Wow.
But yeah, if you like it, he does kind of the same sort of stuff as Kabuto does, like real punchline oriented type stuff. So
I've harbored ideas of having Kabuto on the show.
You totally should.
Yeah, I just don't know. I'm very nervous of anyone. That's the one I'm most nervous about, because I don't think I would get a serious interview.
Well, you probably wouldn't. I will say the creator of Kabuto the Python is the nicest guy alive. Kabuto the Python is not the nicest guy alive.
Well, maybe I could get the guy who created him to interview. That might be nice.
Yeah.
Okay, one other name that people may or may not know, Kid Dead.
Kid Dead, people might know through a guy named Spoken Nerd. Spoken Nerd is a Tennessee-based artist. I think he's from Tennessee. I hope I'm right about that. But anyway, he owns a label, and Spoken Nerd owns the label, and Kid Dead is on the label. And they've done a couple shows with me when they passed through. And the last show that they did when they came through, I just asked him if he wanted to do something, because it was while I was working on the record. And I had that track with Shane Hall started, but we hadn't finished it yet. And I was trying to figure out what I was going to do with it, and it just seemed like a really natural fit. But Kid Dead, he does pretty cerebral rap stuff for the most part, I guess. It's kind of experimental, and he's not as nerdy as Spoken Nerd is, if you wouldn't guess from the names. But yeah, he's a nice guy, really good rapper. So
cool.
TheUnheardNerd.com.
Now I'm going to test you here. The cover art for the the Snuggle is Real.
Yes.
Can you pronounce the artist who did the cover artwork?
I believe it is pronounced. Well, his first name is Thor.
Yeah.
His last name is Thorvaldsen.
Oh, well done. Well done. So I had this conversation with Beefy, because the variant cover for Beefy's album Grown Up is also by Thor.
Yeah.
And we had this conversation, and he had real trouble pronouncing it. So I spot yeah, obviously I checked the name of the artist, and I just wanted to test you. I was trying to trick you. So yeah, apologies for that. But
No, we do a lot of shows. Well, actually, I haven't played there now in like a year, but for a while there, we were doing a ton of shows in Columbia, South Carolina, and that's where Thor lives. And so I got to know him from him coming to a bunch of our shows there.
Mm.
And he's a really good artist, obviously, but it just seemed like with the name and the concept I had for the art, I thought he was like a really good fit for it.
Yeah, well, I just want to make it clear that I really like the artwork for this for this album, because what I said is that I preferred the other artwork for the Beefy album.
Yeah.
I don't want him to feel like I'm dissing his artwork, because I'm not. It's just that preference. But this is really cool. And if anyone hasn't checked it out, they should get over to michaelkill.bandcamp.com, and let's spell that out, because there may be people out there who have not heard of you and don't know about your spelling. So it's M-I-K-A-L-K-H-I-L-L. bandcamp.com.
Yeah, he's a real nowhere man. Carved out an inch into a pile of sand, man. Forget the blueprint, where's the rest of the plan, man? Course we still stand with the contraband in hand. Future tense, never felt less. Seven sin, tried to smile, but let's face it, my credit was spent. Meant to vet it somehow to someone other than you. But you were closest to me, and I was closest to you. But either way, saw the lack of interest in your face. Tossed my misadventure back into deep inner space. It was a paper chase, reflect on the letters. Last ditch effort of a real go-getter. I was better, at least that's how I acted. You were there out of obligation, waiting on reaction. Study it and take notes, keep them in the profile. If it goes back in the text files. Digging, clawing, I find my way out. Digging, clawing, what exactly is a bear? I guess it was predictable, I didn't understand. Tracking the final footsteps of the nowhere man.
If we covered why you changed your the spelling of your name to how it is in the last show.
I don't remember or not. The way Michael Kill became my rap name was when I was like 12, maybe younger. I was on Yahoo chat rooms with my friend. My family's super poor, so I didn't own a computer, but we were in Yahoo chat rooms or AOL chat rooms, one or the other. On their computer, and I needed a screen name, and I was like, well, my name's Kermit Hill, I'll condense that to Kill, and so I just did this phonetic Michael with Kill, and that became my music name that I've put tapes out under since I was like 13. And
Well, interesting bit of information for you.
I was
on holiday recently, 2 weeks away, no internet, no radio, no TV, nothing, no phone, couldn't get a signal on the coast in France. It was lovely, you know, walked to the beach, beautiful, read a lot of books. But what I also did was I wrote a review for a few albums while I was there, one of which was Beefies, which you are on.
Nice.
And as I was typing, I just started typing in Michael Kill, and it automatically comes up on my iPad without me having to change any settings. I've obviously typed it so often that it just comes up with the correct spelling now. So
nice.
There you go. unrelated information. What is related would be the release date for this latest release. What date can we expect it out? The Snuggle is Real.
It's coming out on the 23rd. The digital releases on the 23rd. The tapes start shipping as soon as I get them back from the manufacturer.
We should talk about that. The tapes, cassettes. Yeah. They're making a comeback, it seems.
Yeah, I'd had a couple of my friends do cassettes, and I'm really into collectible music and unique things. So I just got the idea. I was like, well, I want to do a limited release, and I want to do something other than just another CD. And my new car, which is not new at all, it's a 95 Cadillac with a cassette deck in it. So I was like, oh, I'll just make tapes because I need more rap tapes to listen to in the car.
Well, there you are. But I mean, our old car, we also do not have a new car, but I think it's 2007, so you know, it's a bit newer than yours. But the car we had before also had a cassette deck.
Nice.
But it was useful because you get one of those tapes with the wire that you plug your iPod into.
Yeah, and I've got a GPS that has like an MP3 player built into it. So I use one of those tapes with the wire on it and GPS.
There's a lot to be said for having a cassette deck in your car.
Yeah.
Now, I assume we're around about the same age. We don't have to go into specifics, but I certainly grew up listening to music on cassette, and I don't ever want to go back to those dark days because the amount of music I lost and cannot replace because it chewed up in a cassette deck.
Oh, God.
I mean, yeah, I don't know if you remember that heartache. Why do you want to put people through that again?
Well, yeah, that did used to happen to me. I don't know. I guess I'm some sort of sadist.
I just remember you putting the pencil in the cassette and just trying to stretch it out again so that it was unruffled and so that it might play again, but no.
Yeah. They used to have this Blues Brothers tape that got eaten, and the tape got, when we pulled it back around, the tape got like flipped upside down, and it basically played the wrong side and it played it backwards. So then there was one of the songs that would start playing backwards another song on the other side of the tape while you were listening to it, and it would sound like it was saying, "I am Warlock" over and over, which seemed particularly ominous for a Blues Brothers record.
Wow. Well, that's, well, there we go. Yeah, it's just absolutely full of information tonight. okay, everyone's obviously gonna. It's the pre-order. How much? Sorry, I didn't check how much it is. The Snuggle Is Real. How much is that going for? Is that?
It's just like it's $8 American. I don't know what it comes to.
Yeah, it's a few pounds less. I think probably about £5 or £6.
Yeah, it ended up being like a full length album. Whenever I originally was starting it was just going to be an EP, but yeah, so it's technically just as long, maybe longer than Dust, but it's $2 cheaper since I've put it on tape.
Fair enough. And so yeah, this is a warm-up, if you like, or a precursor to your album that's due next year.
Yeah, the big thing with this record was it's kind of like a nerdcore The Chronic, like Dr. Dre's The Chronic, where it's got guests on every single song, and it's like a lot of it is actually really serious. The song that Dr. Awkward is on, like, which is maybe my favorite on the whole record, it's super personal, super serious, and super bleak, but he totally killed it. It's like he probably did one of my favorite verses on the album. But a lot of the record is like that. Most of the record is not a funny record. It's going to be a lot more serious than people are probably used to hearing from some of the people who are guests.
Yeah.
But I kind of wanted something. The next record isn't going to have a ton of guests. It's going to be more just me on every track and stuff. So I wanted to do something leading up to it that was more of a party before the funeral.
Well, yeah, I mean, you have this reputation, and I don't know. Well, I don't want to break it to you. I hope you know already, but that you're a little bit, not necessarily the life of the party all the time.
You got
this downbeat. I was trying to think of the word.
I'm a bummer.
The connotations of that over here might be unfavorable. No, I mean, you've got a serious, I cannot think of the word. What the word? I'm
depressing.
No. How would you? Yeah, let's go with that. Let's go with that.
Morose.
It doesn't sound talking to you right now. Like that's strictly fair.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of it comes down to you, the pictures of you at like Nerdapalooza, where everybody is having a whale of a time, and you look like you're just about to kill someone.
Well, a big thing for me is that I kind of want to be for people what like Elliott Smith's music was for me when I was in high school. Like everybody, a lot of the people in nerdcore, all they really show of themselves is a more like upbeat fun side. Mm-hmm. Or a lot of their music is like escapism and stuff, and there's nothing wrong with that at all, but like I kind of wanted to do something that was more like, well, like growing up as a nerd and as somebody who always was nerdy and didn't really fit in, it really sucked at the time.
Yeah,
it's been really great as an adult, but you know, I think a lot of people who really like my music, they kind of relate to that, and a lot of the people who like nerdcore and then they hear me, it's like they're like, oh yeah, I definitely get that my music is not the music everybody. I don't get invited to do like as many Comic-Cons and stuff as the other guys, because I get that, because what I talk about is not the fun side of being a nerd. It's a lot more of the like the bleak downside.
Yeah, you're the serious side of nerdcore.
Yeah, so I mean, I do fun stuff too, but but you know, I mean, I definitely acknowledge I have like really bad social anxiety and crowds and stuff, which a lot of people probably wouldn't guess who've seen me live and stuff, because I don't really have a problem talking to people at shows most of the time. But like going to parties or any kind of, if I'm not playing and I'm just at a show, like I'm super uncomfortable the whole time. I think of myself as a bit of an extrovert, and I love being on stage. I like being the center of attention, but I am not not a party person. I'm an anti-party person.
I think it comes across. I think this persona, or not, I still can't think of the word. This is what people expect of you, or people, how people view you. I think it comes across in the questions that we've got off the Facebook. So should we delve into some of those?
Yeah, we could do that.
Always first with the questions is Beaker, Brian Kissel. And I think it's really because he just wants actually to be on the podcast with me, because it's obviously far superior to Nerdcore Meow. I think he's got some sort of issue and he just won't come out and ask. So perhaps he will now. Maybe I've opened a channel there.
You should totally have Beaker on. He would be a really good guest.
No, not as a guest. I think he wants to actually be on the show
as a co-host.
I'm not having him as a guest. He doesn't deserve it. What's he ever done for Nerdcore? Anyway, he has, as always, multiple questions, and you'll see the bitterness coming through in one of these. He says the song Beaks T. McGee is the greatest nerdcore song of all time. When will it be released for public consumption?
Well, it was released on Byproduct originally, which is one of the albums of mine that I took out of print last Christmas, because I had so much material. But like I was talking about earlier, I'm really into the idea of music that's limited edition and stuff.
Yeah,
maybe I should just put that on a 45. Make it a 45.
Or make it a 78, then no one can ever listen to it.
It is a great song, though. I love that song.
Okay, well, obviously he thinks so, too. The greatest nerdcore song of all time.
Well, he thinks it's the greatest because it's about him.
Clearly. there's no ego attached to Brian Kissel at all. Okay, second question. I think it's a bit unfair, but and I think you'll defend this to some respects. Why is Chadley so terrible? you see, it's coming through. He doesn't want to be on that podcast anymore.
Oh, that was Beaker's. I should have known that was Beaker's. I don't think Chadley's terrible. No. Chadley, he has improved, especially from when he initially started doing stuff. And I rapped on his newest thing.
And the best track on the album, as per my review of it.
Yeah, actually, I felt bad. I read your review. I think you pointed out the mixing being off on some of the other songs. I actually mixed the song I'm on.
Yeah, I noted.
And it deleted it. It didn't delete it. It delayed the album heavily, which I felt really bad about, because he was waiting on me to finish that song to be able to do stuff.
Well, you know, I did the cover work for him.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, I did that and Rapping in the Rain.
And
I did it ages and ages ago, and I thought actually he'd forgotten about it and ditched the release, but obviously not. But I love
Chadley to death, but I do not understand the name Rapping in the Rain.
I don't know.
I never understood
it's like
title.
Singing in the Rain, Rapping in the Rain,
yeah.
I guess. But,
I mean, if it was a really depressing record, that would... Well,
I think his titles don't necessarily relate to the content within. I mean, the Octopus album kind of lost the Bond theme about two tracks in and then just went off on its own own thing. I was curious about the mixing on that. Did you insist that you mixed the track that you were on? Are you a bit of a control freak is what I'm asking?
I am a complete control freak, and I'm sure if you have Sulfur on at any point, you can definitely...
Well, I had suspicions. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm definitely a control freak, and it's that's one thing. Like I said, I would, if I had to pick one or the other, I would pick Thought Criminals over the stuff I do with Eugene is because with the stuff with Eugene, I have to not be a control freak in the way I normally am. But yeah, I definitely am like a super control freak. Although I don't remember if that's why I told Chadley I had to mix it or not.
Right.
I really don't remember at all. Because when we originally did that verse, it was like last year when I did that verse. And then the album came out, I guess, like 2 months ago. But I did my verse forever ago, and then I just didn't mix it until more recently or whatever. So I don't remember if it was a control freak thing or not, because mixing and mastering stuff is a way more tedious process than just rapping. I mean, versus if they're going to happen, they usually happen really fast. And then the actual mixing and mastering stuff, I'm really like super meticulous about. And so it takes me a lot longer. So usually I don't ask to do that because I'm not like, it's just giving myself extra work.
But
I don't remember if I offered to do it or if I asked to do it. I don't remember.
Well, what I will say about Chadley, and I also have a lot of time for him, I think he gets an awful lot of stick and he takes it really well. But yeah, I absolutely, he's improved a ton, you know, really, really developing. And my biggest gripe was not with his delivery or his verses or, you know, the way he raps. It really was to do with the mixing and the production side of it. So I think if he spends a bit more time on that and gets some help with that, I think, you know, he's got the potential to be, you know, a very competent addition to the nerdcore scene.
I mean, that's true of a lot of people I know. Or the people that, especially folks that just digitally release the stuff, it seems like a lot of times the mixing is where it suffers. And there's a lot of people I know who I think have like a ton of potential. They just gotta, if they had better recording, they would realize it faster.
Yeah.
Realize that potential.
We'd better move on to, we've already addressed Beaker's third question with why did the Thought Criminals break up. Let's go into his fourth question, which was, and I'm only doing this to humour him. Who has more fun on their interviews? Unheard, Turd, yeah, Real Mature, or Super Awesome, Really Great, Best Podcast Ever, Nerdcore Meow? You don't have to answer that. I think it would be immature to take sides, and I think we all know. Really, we all know.
Yeah, I'm not gonna answer.
It's gonna end up in some sort of international fist fight if this goes on. His final question is actually almost sensible. If I understood it, I could say it was 100%. Hopefully, you understand. So it says, how do you map and program your NES/MIDI controller for use with your DAW? And which DAW?
I use Fruity Loops, and actually, I don't ever sequence my Nintendo. Most people do. I use a MIDI keyboard running into the MIDI in on my digital audio workstation, which is a Delta 1010 that they haven't even manufactured for 6 or 7 years. The type of one I have now. There's like a cheaper, crappier version you can get of it, but the version I use isn't available anymore. But I actually use a digital keyboard that does MIDI stuff, and then I run that out to the Nintendo through a cartridge I use. And then I run the line out on the audio on the Nintendo into a preamp, and then run the preamp into my digital audio workstation.
Well, there is actually a video on YouTube of you demonstrating this. I watched it just a couple of days ago.
Yeah, that gives you a better idea than anything I just said.
If you want to look it up, it's on the it cropped up on the Nerdcore Facebook group. It's a group, isn't it? I always forget what it is.
Yeah.
We got a follow-up question to that from B-Type, Stephen Brunton from here in the UK. And are you familiar with B-Type?
I know of him, and I think I've heard some of his music.
Yeah.
He's been on some compilation things I was also on, I think.
Yeah. He asks, would you like to see MIDI controller-themed music? Would you like to see them used in live setups more, or would it detract from the acts that do that as a USP, unique selling point?
I think it depends. I mean, I used to play the Nintendo with keyboard live at Thought Criminal shows all the time. I think it just depends on how well it's incorporated. I don't think it should be incorporated just for the sake of doing it. I mean, I used to actually play DS through a guitar amp too, and I used to do that, and I liked doing it, but it hasn't made sense to do it with my new setup, and I'm not just gonna shoehorn it in just for the sake of it. I think if somebody can do it and they can make it interesting, then sure. But I don't think rappers in particular should ever start incorporating instruments just for the sake of doing it. If it doesn't add something to your performance, then it takes something away. So
yeah,
I play guitar sometimes on stuff, but there's a lot of songs, like if I know I need to emote more with my hands and stuff, like I just rap on it live. And I think I've known a lot of people who get experimental just for the sake of getting experimental, and I think it detracts from their live show. I'll even say, if Jesse listens to this, I hope he doesn't take it personally. Jesse Dangerously is one of the best live performers I know, and one of the best rappers I know too. And a lot of times at his live shows, he tries to do all this weird shit, whereas what he should be doing is just rapping really well, because he's better than 9/10 of people. So if he would just do that, it's more impressive than him playing around with a MIDI controller, which, you know, not that he's awful at that even, but it's like, you're such a good rapper, just rap. You don't need to spend time on this other stuff.
It's possible he listens. He has hit me up as a potential guest, and he will be on at some point. The only reason he hasn't been on earlier is that I had a string of Canadians, and I was like, too many Canadians in a row. I might as well emigrate. Greg Frost Arnold is jumping on the multiple question bandwagon here, and he says, what's your favorite Michael Kill song, and why is it Martyr?
Martyr is sort of like a statement of purpose. And I guess I've leaked that song. It's from Human Disaster, and I've leaked that song on my SoundCloud, but most people don't even know I have a SoundCloud.
More secrets coming out. Here we go.
So that's the first song I've leaked from Human Disaster, and I do it live, but the song itself is about how I got into rap and how long I've been making rap and my experience as a rapper or whatever. It addresses a lot of my concerns with other artists. It's a very mean song. It's a very mean song, but it's not targeted at anyone specifically. It's targeted at everyone in general. Okay. The song is essentially about how, like, there's one line in the song says, if you never felt like rap was ruining your life, then rap ain't your life. And it's basically, the song is about how art will ruin your life. And if you should be making art, it probably needs to have gotten to that point at some point, because otherwise you probably don't have enough ambition or drive about it to continue doing it in any real way. Okay. Which is maybe a harsh blanket statement to make about artists, but lots of folks really like the idea of being an artist, but don't really like the idea of like pushing their art or doing anything but writing songs.
Okay, he continues, as a fan of depressing music, what does Kill think is the most depressing song of all time?
Oh, man. you know, that's hard. Well, I will say a song that makes me... I'll name two songs that make me cry like every time I listen to them.
Okay, go for it.
The first one is King's Crossing by Elliott Smith. Which he finalized the recording of like a week or two before he killed himself. There's a line in the song where he says, give me one good reason not to do it. And like a week before he killed himself, he had his girlfriend come in and record the part that they had started, her and one of her friends had started screaming in response every time he said that line when he would do the song live. And so he goes, give me one good reason not to do it. And then his girlfriend sings, Because I Love You. It is soul crushing, man.
And what's the other?
The other is a song by a folk punk group called Against Me, and it's a song called Pints Against Make You Strong. It's about his grandmother and grandfather, and his grandfather basically hated working this shitty factory job he had for years and basically drank himself to death on New Year's Eve one year. And the song is about how his grandmother never got over him and, like, loved him until the day she died. So wow. It's an amazing song. I played it at my wedding.
Wow. Okay.
So those two songs are two of my very favorite super depressing songs. That King's Crossing isn't necessarily even one of my very favorite Elliott Smith songs, but it's one of the most depressing Elliott Smith songs.
Well, I hope Greg's proud of himself for bringing the tone of the podcast down there. He tries to redeem himself with one final question, and he says, when will we see more tracks from Boot Era Click? Please, please.
We have 5 songs maybe written and recorded. Boot Era Click is, for people who don't know, it's a super group of Charlotte musicians, which includes a lot of my very favorite rappers from the area that I've ever done shows with and stuff. One of them is Nim, and he actually just recently did a song with Dan Bull based on Assassin's Creed or whatever, which I've never played, so. But the beat's real good, and Dan Bull rapped well on it. But Nim, he was actually like signed with Interscope G-Unit and stuff in the 2000s, but they never released his record, and he retired from music. And I partially created Boot Era Click to bring him out of retirement. But the other members are Sulfur from Thought Criminals, MC Stealth, which is a female rapper from Charlotte who's really good, and Kaiza Sose, who is another super nerdy rapper that I've known for a really long time. Started doing shows with him in Charlotte in like 2002, 2003. And partially getting him involved was just like, I wanted to hear more stuff recorded from him because he's done live shows and stuff forever, but he only has like one mixtape. He's never gotten around to releasing a real album. So, but it's super hard to get this group of people together because we're all working on different things all the time. So that's really the only thing that's delayed it. But I have a backlog of songs recorded by Boot Era Click, and there will be a Boot Era Click record. It's just not done yet. Probably March, April, maybe it'll finally be finished.
Well, plenty to look forward to.
Yeah.
Joe Otterber, and I hope I pronounced that correctly, probably not. It says, Kill, are you or are you not the hero of Canton? Now, I've got to be honest, I don't know what that means. I really don't.
The hero of Canton is a Firefly reference.
Oh, okay.
Joe lives in Canton, Ohio. And we met there. I was just on tour with Tribe One, and I played there a few weeks ago. And after I got off stage, he's like, I can't believe you didn't call yourself the hero of Canton whenever you were on stage. And I was like, oh, fuck. So, yeah, I totally blew my chance to make that witty banter on stage. But, yeah, Joe's a really cool guy who lives there. It was a weird show we did in Canton. Because there weren't a ton of people there to see us, but Joe like knew all our words, like, and that's always really good.
It happens
more now than it did years ago, but it's still super awesome when you are at a show and you actually see somebody who's knows every single lyric and is probably rapping it better than you are.
Well, fun fact for you, I'd never watched Firefly until I listened to the Browncoats mix.
Really?
Yeah, it inspired me to watch it, and absolutely dig it. But I've only ever watched it through once, so I'm not super familiar.
I need to rewatch it. It's been about a year since I watched it, but it's actually my very favorite sci-fi franchise. Like, I like it better than Star Trek or Star Wars. It goes Firefly, Star Wars, or Firefly, Star Trek, then Star Wars.
Okay,
is my ranking.
I've never ranked anything like that, so I'll refuse to answer.
You're guaranteed to make people angry by ranking them. So.
I don't know if it's that I'm worried. I cannot rank things. I never have a favorite anything. I just don't.
Really?
I like too much to say I like this better than that. And, you know, it depends on the day as well. You know, I might
Yeah, I will say it depends on the day.
I just can't do it. I'm too. I think
Star Wars is always third, though. The first two could alternate. Star Wars is always third. I love Star Wars, but
yeah,
still always third.
I think I'd probably do it the other way around if I was going to. But yeah. Anyway, by the by. Whitney Harper, I think, has already got her wish, and it wasn't a question. She just said, I want him to tell a sad story. And I think you've done that with the most depressing song question. Unless you have any other sad stories you'd like to...
It might have been a sad story for my life. Well, but maybe. Usually those just pop into my brain because something reminds me of something. Whenever people ask me on the spot to tell one, I'm always blank.
And I think we're having too much fun for sad stories. I don't.
Yeah, yeah. Sad stories are fun too, though.
Well, yeah, they can. They can be. They can.
I've literally made Tribe One cry more than once by just telling him stories from my childhood. Literally, I had him just put his hands, head into his hands, sit down and cry.
Oh man. Well, that's some of his cred gone.
No, I think his cred goes out the window when you find out that one of the songs he wrote is based on his favorite Dashboard Confessional album. Which maybe I'm putting him on the spot.
Maybe.
He tells the story on stage, though. So.
Oh, well.
But yeah, Plans for the Weekend on the Malibu Shark Attack record is based on a Dashboard Confessional EP that I've never heard.
Cole Olsen, who we obviously are familiar with.
Yeah, Ultra Klystron.
It is Ultra Klystron. Just at that moment of blank, it's like, you know. Right, again, multiple questions here. Favorite song of your own? I think
I didn't answer that, actually, because he asked what my favorite song was and why it was Martyr. Actually, I think my favorite song of my own is probably Inside the Box off of Dust. And just because it was like, I sat down, I wrote it, and I think the vocal take on it is take one.
Understanding and resentment. Beginning never as complicated as the way it was meant. It's the same tale, but it's told a thousand times. Truth behind a million kids, putting together simple fuck you lines. Behind a million crimes, a million good intentions. When I was doing good, I never resorted to no foul shit. But nowadays, things just get carried away. The nerdy kid you liked is now the one sneaking it out the back way. It is what it is. A lot of my friends caught up in shady shit, but kid you with misrepresentation, that is all they get. I never claimed to be a saint, deny the role of sinner. Refuse to accept the role of loser. So many unjust winners. I look at my daughter's face and see my grandmother's eyes. When I look into my wife's, I hear one word, survive. Whatever it takes, whatever it means to get from there to here. When I was younger, the world seemed so fucking crystal clear. But nowadays, there's nothing left to feel. I never find that connection. Spit it off some dusty reel to reel the big squeal. The sheep all speak but say nothing. Spend my life in the face and never waste my time bluffing. Guess that's sort of the message. Can't win the losing battle. You're just another piece of me shuffled beside the other cattle. Hear the death rattle, the shaking in the crib. You never make it out trapped in a box. You can't even remove the lid. Fuck it, I wrote my own epitaph. Read it aloud to anyone that would listen. Sum my feelings in a paragraph. The walking dead, the zombie missing his heart. Driven by brain, you know I never miss the good part. I'm the kind of guy that waits for the credits at the end of the film. Resenting the people around me till I realize I become them. I die in a whim, but at least the whim will be mine. Fly into the clouds, but you never say I'm driving blind. I know exactly what moves me, exactly what I feel, exactly what the game is. Wrote the terms, maybe a bad deal. Scorch my name into this, burn my fate into the sky. Complete unwillingness to meet you halfway just to say goodbye. A beam of light in the darkness never showing you the way. Sword kept swinging till there was no one left to hear what I had to say. And I think I like it that way.
All right. Okay.
I literally sat down, wrote it, and recorded it in like 10 minutes. But it was just like, all right, everything about that song was perfect. I didn't do the music to it. That one was one Romero Shaw produced. So I feel slightly less bad or conceited, arrogant, whatever. For but his music combined, just like the music he wrote for that song, just brought stuff out, and it's just one of my favorite songs I've written by far. So,
okay, flipping it around, favorite song of another artist.
Favorite song of any other artist?
Yeah.
Oh man, that is a broad question.
Hmm.
This
is why I don't have favorites. Yeah.
Trying to think of like all the stuff I forced Tribe One to listen to in the car on tour. The many, many times I said this is one of my favorite songs. I'll say For You by Bruce Springsteen off of his album Greetings from Asbury Park or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
That's like one of my favorite songs of all time. In My Life by the Beatles. Sweet Adeline by Elliot Smith.
Yeah.
I should probably say a rap song.
Yeah, maybe.
That's way harder.
Well, what if we narrowed it down and said your favorite nerdcore track?
Favorite nerdcore track? Maybe I Am Him by Adam Warrock. Such a great lead-off song on that album. He hates that album, but to me, that album is part of the reason me and him, he's one of my very best friends, and that album is one of the reasons like we connected so much after I heard that record, and we became really fast friends.
Yeah, I'm in a different country to most nerdcore fans or artists,
yeah.
But I still feel like I've made a connection with most, of the main players at least, most people in nerdcore. I've never felt I've made any kind of connection with Adam Warrock to the point where I was paranoid that the guy hated me for no good reason, and I actually emailed him and said, have I ever done anything to upset you? Because honestly, I really feel like I've annoyed you somehow. And he was like, no.
Yeah.
Are you nuts? and now again, I think it's because of that we can have no connection ever.
I wouldn't say that's true.
I don't know.
I think we've mentioned you in some capacity.
That weird guy with the email.
You are really somebody I do like champion to people whenever I'm talking about blogs they need to send their music to or whatever, because a lot of people create blogs and stuff as like a means of self-promotion, but you seem really like invested in the music itself and seem beyond that. So I mean, not saying everybody does that obviously, but your site is presented and the level of professionalism you handle everything with is like top notch. Good job, man.
Thanks, man. Thanks. It means a lot.
but yeah, so I mean, I've totally recommended him doing stuff with you, and I don't think he has anything.
When his last album came out, he sent me an early copy to review, and I love Adam Warrock's music. I love virtually everything. There's very little that I don't enjoy from him. It's hard to keep up with it all because there's a new song probably by the time we finish speaking, but everything I listen to I enjoy, and I think we share a lot of common interests. This thing is I obviously I communicate with you, I communicate with a lot of other people via social media or whatever. I have literally no rapport with him whatsoever.
I think me and him are really similar in a lot of ways. Although Jesse Dangerously used to say that Adam Warrock's personality was more like my music, and my personality was actually more like Adam Warrock's music, as far as how our actual temperaments are in person. He's way more of an introvert than I am, so he doesn't get involved with as much community discussion and stuff just because he's way more like private, I guess.
I guess that's it. And it's my own insecurities coming through. Really.
Yeah.
So we should continue with Cole's last question.
Okay.
Lots of multiple questions. Yeah, I like it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I might have to start editing some of these. We're spending a lot of time on questions. And not all of them are particularly relevant, like this one. How many licks does it take to get to the center of a Tootsie Roll?
Tootsie Roll.
Okay, it's typo. It's not my fault. And I don't know what a Tootsie Roll is.
I always call it a Tootsie Roll, which I believe is incorrect. Actually, I did a... In my seventh grade class, we did a test or whatever in my seventh grade math class to figure it out. And it was like 300 and something, but it's been too long. I don't remember the exact number. It was 300 and something.
Wow.
The commercial, there's an old commercial where like somebody asked this owl, like, how many licks does it take? And the owl's like, one, two, and then he bites it on the third one. Because there's like a chocolate candy in the middle of a lollipop.
I need to get on Google about this, I think.
Yeah, I didn't realize you guys didn't have Tootsie Pops. They're a big thing here.
Not familiar with it at all. I mean, possibly under a different name, but doesn't sound familiar at all.
Yeah.
Right, yeah. Cracking on. Evan Lee, what's the next step for Curmudgeon Core? And who are you thinking will be the next big names?
Me and Adam Warrock have actually talked about doing an EP called Grumpy Old Men. And basically rapping as Statler and Waldorf. So I think that'll be the next step in Curmudgeon Core. Curmudgeon Core has to be just like me and maybe Schaefer the Dark Lord. And I can't really think of anyone else that would fit it. It's random at times.
Yeah.
I'd say Mega Ran at times. His new verse. Is gonna make his verse on my record is probably gonna make some people mad, but
oh, more intrigue. So many teasers. Evan asked another question again, multiple questions. He's got three there, seems to be the main number of questions. I don't know if I understand this, hope you do. How many shots in are you before prime recording producing time, and how many more before it sounds good?
Normally, I record and produce sober unless I'm working with a group. But most of the time, whenever I record and write stuff, I'm completely alone in a super dark room, just kind of zoning out on my own.
Mm. You're a whiskey man, are you?
Yeah. I drink like a lot of bourbon.
Right.
Well, not a lot of bourbon. I really don't.
Drunk right now.
I think people will be surprised. I don't really drink at home very much unless I have people over, and I almost never have people over because I live in the middle of nowhere. Nobody wants to drive to my house. But yeah, I live like 45 minutes away from Charlotte, which is the nearest major city, and you know, everybody lives far away from me. Nobody wants to come here, and I don't drink alone. My wife doesn't drink, so at home I don't really drink a lot. The only time I really drink at home is when me and Warrock and Tribe are playing Magic on webcam. We'll all be drinking. But really, that's the only time I drink at home. So usually I record sober.
I can relate to that. The only time I drink is when I'm on the Nerdcore Meow podcast for the Christmas special. And I have to be really drunk for that.
Nice.
Evan also asks, which songs of yours are radio friendly? And he says this is just a callback from one of Hex's questions for you last year.
Yeah, Hex actually got copies of all my albums for their internet radio station.
Mm.
And yeah. He was like...
Hex is from Nerdy Show. And
so, yeah.
For people who don't know.
He was like, do you have any clean songs? And I actually thought I was correct when I said, well, I mean, I don't really curse in most of my album tracks. I probably use just about anything. Mm. Then he got the music and then he tweeted him. He was like, literally every one of these songs is cussing in it. I was like, oh, well, I guess I just didn't think about it. So that's where that came from. I don't know if I have any music on my old records that is totally clean. I don't think I cuss a ton on Walking Dead. And the new record, a lot of it I don't curse on. Just the nature of the songs doesn't lend to it. When I'm trying to be funny, I tend to curse a lot.
Yeah.
Whenever I'm not trying to be funny, I don't curse very much. So,
the new Frontal Lot album doesn't have any swearing on it whatsoever. And it's kind
that's
of
typical for him, though, right? He doesn't curse a ton anyway, even though he has some very, like, not kid-friendly topics.
Yeah, not loads, but, you know, it's like my shit is a little bit raw. It's like, well, yeah, I can play most of the album, but not that track in front of the kids. And
actually, so, I don't like censor myself in front of my kids, and that they're not allowed to curse at school or in front of their grandmother. But otherwise, as long as they're not in public, keep it to at the house. Yeah. You know, but if you die in a video game and you say, "Oh shit," then I'm not going to be mad.
The last question then that we have, there may be more added that I didn't, you know, since we started recording, I haven't checked. So we've got Kyle Barboza, and he says, "I liked the Planeswalkers EP you did with Adam Warrock and Tribe One. Will we see more collaborative projects from the three of you in the future?"
Definitely. I mean, there's another, we're going to do a No Friends record, which is Warrock, Tribe, Sulfur, and me. It's just a matter of when. We don't have anything. I mean, me and Warrock have something we're going to be working on, I think, in December, but it hasn't been announced yet. And we're doing that Grumpy Old Men EP. I'm actually, I don't know what I can really say about it at this point, but me and Tribe One are starting a label next year with a guy named Dexter Pizza Bones from Virginia. And I'll be like producing a record for Tribe One for that in the future. But he writes like glacially slow, so God only knows when a Tribe One record will be finished.
and yet he raps so fast.
Yeah, well, we were working on his new EP, which isn't available anywhere digitally, so I know you probably have not heard it yet.
No.
But he sells it on tour right now, and it will be available in the future. I produced several tracks on it, and I mixed and mastered the whole thing. Or I mastered it. Cecil Nick from Salvo mixed it. But I made him rewrite several songs or verses for several songs, and he had stuff he needed to add. He just came up for 2 weekends and we banged it all out. But literally there was a point where he spent 8 hours writing like 4 lines. And I mean, it's a testament to how seriously he takes his craft and whatever, but man, I could never ever spend 4 hours on like 4 bars or 8 hours on 4 bars. He literally was in my kitchen from the time the sun came up until it went down, finishing one like half a verse. But I mean, he's the best rapper I know, so
yeah,
obviously it's worth it. But it's crazy to me. It's the complete opposite of the way me and Warrock write.
I was absolutely thrilled that he was over here and I got the opportunity to see him perform. It made me love him even more. Because he's such a really cool guy and you know, just really humble and personable.
Him, Warrock, and Sulfur are like my best friends on earth. Like, and they're all like super great people.
Cool. Well, that's all the questions. Have you got anything else secret that you need to announce or tease us with? Or
yeah, probably not that I need to announce at this point. I have a lot of stuff that is in the works, and I'm producing an EP for a really big nerdcore name that I believe will be coming out in December. But I don't think I can say who it's for yet.
Okay.
But I'll tell you after we're not recording.
Okay. Yeah, in your face, nerdcore fans. Finally, then, let's wrap up. You've got a story with regards to Sinking Ship off of the new release. What's your story about Schaefer, the Dark Lord, and you?
So me and Schaefer did this song, Sinking Ship, on my new record. And when I sent it to him, all I sent him was the instrumental. It didn't have my verses on it. It didn't have my chorus on it. It had nothing. He sent me back his verse, and by sheer coincidence, we both start both of our verses with the same line, which was total coincidence. And it has not, the name of the song is Sinking Ship, but it has nothing to do with a sinking ship or anything. Both of our verses start with "It's been 10 years."
Wow!
And that was total coincidence. It's like providence.
That's cool. So people go over to michaelkill.bandcamp.com get your pre-orders in, and you can listen to that track whether you pre-order or not, but do pre-order, because you should. Absolutely. Okay, that's it, that's the show.
Sweet.
Thank you very much for joining me, Michael Kill, for a second time. You're one of a very few number of people that have been on the show twice.
Thank you for having me. No,
you're more than welcome. Of course, I'm sure we'll have you back further on down the line to tease us with more stuff that we can't find on the internet. And perhaps you'll give us that answer at that point.
Yeah.
That would be awesome. Michael, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Oh, Lord, it's tough to be living with a dream.
A long struggle used to feel less worth it. These days it takes me places I don't even know if I deserve it. But there's moments nobody understands the hurt, and rather be with my kids than stand to hear blurting words that people who might never understand the things that I say or the way that I am. I hear a little girl's voice on the phone and understand it, girl, you do come first, and you're too little to get it. I know it's the worst, and that's why I have to do this. I can't stop, oh, harder till my heart finally stops. And when you're finally old enough to understand, hope you find it in your heart to forgive your old man.
Hush, hush, little baby, don't you cry.
I'll be home soon, I swear it.
Hush, hush, little baby, don't you cry.
I'll be home soon. I was on my way to Brooklyn with the tears in my face. You said to come home, but I was too far for that place. I was driving through the snow, tires took me further away. Talking about the fire level, wanted me to play. And I heard the way that you was frantic in your voice. One day you'll understand it's not that easy of a choice. Yeah, cut deep, laid awake all night, thinking about it with no sleep. But in this life you pay for everything. I do this for you, I do it for us, I do it for me too. But it's not all selfish, hope you haven't forgot that yes, it's true. Your daddy was a dream, but your daddy was always true. When it comes down to it, you're gonna carry your own dream, and you get to decide for yourself what that means. Don't be scared to throw rocks at the throne. It's just a matter of time till daddy gets back home.
Hush, hush, little baby, don't you cry.
I'll be home soon, I swear it.
Hush, hush, little baby, don't you cry.
I'll be home soon.
Living with a dream. Child, it's tough, but your daddy is a dream.
TheUnheardNerd.com.
A reading from leetology.com/album/burning-bright. A review of Burning Bright by Michael Kill. I listened to Michael Kill's Burning Bright, and I have to say, that was one of the worst experiences of my life. I mean, I don't remember being circumcised, but I imagine it must have felt something like this. Fluctuating volume levels on the instrumental, combined with vocals so quiet that often the lyrics can't be heard, make for an overall painful listening experience. Plus, the general whiny emo tone of the album left a bad taste in my mouth, or ears. I thought this was supposed to be a nerdcore album, but I found almost nothing of noteworthy nerdism in its meagre 4 tracks and barely 11 minutes of runtime. The third track, Balthazar, Requiem for the Party's Healer, sounded like it should be nerdy, but after a couple D&D references in the first verse, it then goes on to be about death, suicide, and mortality in general. Track 4 was a terrible cover remix of Maps, originally by Yeah Yeah Yeahs, that felt very out of place. The themes of the other two tracks were loneliness, loss of a girl, and alcoholism. I think so, anyway. I could be wrong, because the whole album felt a bit confusing. No song seems to have an identifiable hook, and I felt the narrative and message of each track are difficult to follow. In summary, I found this album to be abrasive in its lack of production, lyrically confusing and not nearly nerdy enough, and I wouldn't recommend it to anyone. If asked to describe it in one word, that word would invariably be shit, with a capital S and maybe even an exclamation point. But hey, this is my first review, so maybe I'm taking things out of context, or maybe I'm just an arsehole. But I think an arsehole would know shit when he sees it or hears it. I would rate this album 1 out of 10. But since our score is only out of 5, is it possible to give a 0.5? Can I do that? 0.5 out of 5.